I am a former TV meteorologist. In fact, yesterday when I was registering, they asked me what my SEAL number was, and it was so low that they were surprised that any of us were still around. But I'm happy to report I am around. I haven't done TV on a daily basis since 1993. I am CEO of Weather Data Services, which is an AccuWeather company. And as such, I have some opinions as a former board chairman of the Board of Broadcast Meteorology on some of the things I'm seeing in local television weather. Now you say, yeah, but you haven't done weather in 15 years on a daily basis, and that's certainly true, but I have some special qualifications. Which is a very loud way of saying I travel for business way too much. In fact, since 2006, I have been to 33 different television markets in which I can say I've actually watched the TV weather. And a number of these markets I have visited multiple times. And one of the things that has stuck out to me is that even when there are tornadoes, even when there's flooding, even when there is a major winter storm, there is a fair amount of sameness that seems to have crept in from coast to coast across the United States, whereas the weather format, the format of the weathercast, is the same every night, regardless of whether there's a flood, whether there's a tornado, there's too much sameness. Now, I would contend that for several reasons, sameness is bad, variety or innovation is good, and it's good for a couple of reasons. It's good because it helps to distinguish you from your competition, and it helps to distinguish your station from the competition to hopefully build ratings and financial success for the station, which in turn, at least to an extent we hope, translates to you. Now, what am I talking about? Well, there are all kinds of easy to use tools that are out there during storm situations or unusual weather situations to help you better localize your weathercast, and localization is important. I think we all agree with that. To better localize your weathercast and make it more meaningful for your audience. The first one, which really surprises me how little these are used, is the real-time local storm reports from the National Weather Service. I was over at our booth earlier today, and someone came up to me and said, "What are those?" And I said, "They're the LSRs." And the person had no idea what it was I was talking about. So I'm going to explain what the LSRs are. Let's say there's a tornado, and there are storm spotters out, and in this case, a policeman. The policeman sees the tornado. He relays it via radio to his dispatcher, who in turn relays it to the National Weather Service, and the local storm report comes out on the Family of Services or NOAAPort, and it's available to you. It's an excellent source of real-time information, yet I'm shocked at the number of TV stations that don't use them. I'm sitting in a hotel room watching TV weather during a tornado situation in Market, sorry, I won't say the name, and I'm sitting there with my laptop, and I'm able to access this information, but the TV meteorologist that particular night was not. And you get information, you can create snow depth maps with these, ice thickness during ice storms, flood reports. It's a wealth of real-time information. Many NWS offices now get these out in less than 1 minute from the time the report is received. We know about Baron ThreatNet, we know about our StormHawk product. There are a number of these products that will get you to the storm so that you can get live video or other information back to the station and report on it firsthand. Do they work? Well, I'll let a TV station in Wichita, KWCH, tell you.
One in particular helped us and our chasers watch the storm. Our exclusive SelectWarn and StormHawk technology allowed us to gather and display real-time spotter reports as it all happened.
There's no question that using these reports and training your spotters will allow you to do a better job of localizing the information and being proactive in terms of getting critical information on the air. Another thing that surprises me, and again, I've been in a TV station with its own radar in the past month, and they didn't even know where the tilt control was. The antenna control that tilts the radar above horizontal, or the different tilt strategies of the WSR-88D. That just blows me away. So here we're going to do a very quick little primer on radar tilt strategy. Almost all TV stations start with tilt 1, which is good, but of course there are different tilts available from the radar that allow you to clear buildings, trees, and other obstructions. And usually the next tilt is about 1.5 degrees above horizontal, and that's good. But when the radar's in the 4.1 minute severe weather mode, they come out with an intermediate tilt that is 0.95 degrees, and the radar antenna is 0.95 degrees. So it completely clears the ground, clears most obstructions. All of the energy from the radar is getting up to survey the storm, and so you actually get more accurate information, especially when the radar is nearby, than by using tilt 1. Here's an example, and this is from 2 weeks ago Tuesday, the Stirling radar. This was tilt 1. There had been an area of storms that had come through earlier in the day. There was a bit of a temperature inversion, and yes, while all the manufacturers and product vendors have various types of clutter suppression, why do you want to even deal with this? Going to tilt 2 gave you that image. Almost no ground clutter, a better look at the storms, and about 5 minutes later, this is what the storm looked like, smoothed. Tilt 2, no ground clutter, the polygon storm warning. It's a far clearer, easier to focus in on presentation than it is simply by using tilt 1. And it's especially important when the storms are close to the radar, 20 miles or less. We all remember what happened 2 weeks ago last night at the Boy Scout camp north of Omaha. Well, this is the Omaha radar, tilt 1 at 5:47 p.m. And I want you to focus on the storm, the intense core, southwest of the town of Wahoo. Doesn't look like much is going on other than a hailstorm, right? Look what happens when you go up to tilt 2. The hook echo manifests itself. Now that was at 5:47 p.m. It may be even that the Weather Service didn't look at tilt 2 because it was 9 more minutes before the tornado warning was issued, and sure enough, the LSR came out a few minutes later. At 6:11 p.m., the Weather Service reported that at 6:08, the tornado passed 1 mile south of Wahoo. So when the storms are in close, either tilting your own radar up or using the other tilts from the WSR-88D can reveal critical local information that can help you do a better job for your viewers. Another thing is rainfall. I mean, given the current interest in local fruits and vegetables and gardening and everything, people want to know how much it rained at their house. Well, there are all kinds of techniques out there, most of them very inexpensive, and one even available from the government off the internet, where you can get gauge-adjusted rainfall information every 24 hours and put it on the air. And you can create very nice-looking rainfall maps where you can talk about how much rain fell at the airport and how much rain fell across the other parts of your viewing area. In fact, our client in Atlanta has been going up to Lake Lanier during this drought, which is where Atlanta gets its drinking water, and doing reports about how much rain has fallen at Lake Lanier, even though there isn't a weather station there, using this technique to monitor the drought. Another thing, again, people don't work or people don't live at the airport. The National Weather Service's MADIS network has got wonderful reports from many, many more reporting stations than are available from the airport. I took this 2 weeks ago today in southeastern Nebraska. It's an RWIS, Roadway Weather Information System station that's in the MADIS network. There are even Union Pacific has got very accurate temperature sensors all along its track, and you can almost see the track going from northeast to southwest across Kansas and the panhandles and across southern Nebraska. And again, you can use this MADIS data to high wind gusts, local temperature peaks, all types of information to better localize your weathercast. And then the final thing I want to talk about is lightning information. I'm really surprised at the number of TV stations that sort of let the lightning bolts flash and really don't even refer to it anymore. Well, one of the things you can do, because there is, of course, a lag between when the lightning hits the ground and the thunder, and then thirdly, when the 90 seconds it takes to be actually displayed on the air. But you can go, say, folks on Ellipsis Road, Preston Hill Road are hearing thunder right now because of the thunderstorms in the area, and talk about the thunderstorm, the lightning and thunder moving into individual neighborhoods. It's almost never done, but it's a great way to localize a weathercast. Now here's another lightning storm. This one, again, you can put on the streets and everything and talk about it, the lightning moving into the Winchester area. And you can also use one of the lightning forecast techniques that are out there that can forecast lightning 20 to 30 minutes in advance and tell people to go gather up the kids, bring the kids in, because lightning's moving into the Riverside neighborhood, for example, if you were in the Wichita area. These are all very good localization techniques with valuable weather information that in most cases this data is something you're already getting and not having to pay any more for, which I guarantee you in this economy your news director and general manager will appreciate. So these are just some techniques and some ideas that I'm wanting to stimulate a little thought and a little discussion, so that you can think about ways to tailor your weathercast, hopefully for higher ratings and greater individual success. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them for you. Thank you.